Are you a baby boomer who plans to retire at age 65 or even before? Didn't think so. Our guest this hour says fewer than 15% of boomers plan to stop working at age 65, and that's good news for the economy and the looming Social Security deficit. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 past 8 on this Thursday, July the 17th. And we will welcome your calls for our guest, whether you are a baby boomer or not. But I'm especially interested in hearing from baby boomers who are at or near retirement age. How's that working for you? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Jeff Goldsmith, president of Health Futures Incorporated and an associate professor of public health sciences at the University of Virginia. He's the author of The Long Baby Boom, An Optimistic View for a Graying Generation. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm great. I'm a boomer. Are you a boomer?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll be 60 in October.
Yeah. Are you you're going to keep on working past 65?
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine not working.
Really? Don't you want to hang it up for a while?
Well, I mean, I'm a free agent like a lot of my generation and have been self-employed since the early 80s. So, you know, the issue of, you know, going to an office and punching a time clock isn't the way my life works.
Mm-hmm.
I do consulting. I help as an advisor to small companies, and I also write books like this one.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
You know, Peter Drucker was able to continue doing things like that on into his 90s and making a positive contribution, and I greatly admired him.
And only 15% of boomers say that they plan to stop working at 65.
Yeah, and that's actually a fairly consistent number. But, you know, when we think about retirement as, you know, work 50, 60, 70 hours a week until age 65 and then boom, no work, I think that idea is going away. I think what we're seeing instead is what some people call phased retirement, where people gear down and, you know, either work part-time or on an episodic basis, or view 65 as a time where they stop doing something for someone else that isn't rewarding to them or society and start doing something that's more meaningful.
Yeah, I get it. So yeah. I might give up my hosting chair here for my Gen X producer, but then go into some other, maybe some other field, something, you know, maybe I'll start up my own business.
Well, look at Dan Shore. I mean, Dan is, what, 88?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, he's just, it's marvelous to listen to him. I don't always agree with what he says, but he's really tracking things closely, and there's so much wisdom in what he has to say. So, I mean, I think think about Dan Shore.
Yeah. You know, I was looking, though, at a study that, a couple of different studies that came out within the last couple of months, surveys and studies that, it said that a new study suggests baby boomers will need to tighten their belts as they age since they are likely to outlive their assets. So
yeah.
We're working maybe not because we want to, but because we have to.
Well, I think there's a little bit of both of those things. There is a significant percentage of our generation that is under-reserved for retirement. If by under-reserved you mean do not have enough passive income coming in from retirement accounts and Social Security to sustain their current living standards. So clearly people are going to have to make some changes, and particularly for the youngest boomer is 44 years old, there's lots of time to begin correcting that problem. But I think, you know, when you look at the surveys, what you learn is that regardless of whether people are in that position or not, a significant majority of boomers would continue working if they were set for life, because work is so big a part of our lives and what we do. It's what gives our lives meaning. It's where our friends are.
Mm-hmm. And you say that is actually good news for instance, the worries about the solvency of Social Security.
There have been a couple of recent studies. The one that I cite in my book is Gene Sterley at the Urban Institute, who says that if you add 5 years to people's work life, which I think is a reasonable forecast of what's going to happen with us, and you throw off enough additional tax dollars, both in Social Security and in income taxes, to fund a significant portion of the unfunded part of our Social Security liability. But the other thing is that you increase the asset base of the boomer if the money is saved. That's a crucial caveat. If the additional money is saved, then people's lifetime income increases by 56%. That's how much leverage there is. So working longer is not only good for people's financial condition, but it's also good for our society's fiscal problem.
Yeah, and what about Medicare?
Medicare is a tougher nut. What I compared Medicare in the book to a Camaro Z28. It's a high-powered fiscal gas guzzler, mm-hmm. and the problems with Medicare are far larger than the demographic ones that our generation poses. Medicare pays for care under highly inflationary ground rules, where the more a provider does, the more they make. Those ground rules have to be changed, or we've got a serious problem with Medicare. And it isn't a baby boomer problem. It's a problem we're having now, years before the first baby boomer enrolls.
Yeah, you're calling for both Medicare and Social Security to become flexible benefits rather than rigid programs. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean is that these programs ought to fit better both the life circumstances and resource positions of boomers. I think it's idiotic for us to be writing Social Security checks to people who are still working and who do not need them, and taxing away 30 or 40% of the check and then borrowing the rest of it from the Chinese, which is basically what we're doing now. So my argument in the book is that people ought to be able to defer receiving Social Security as long as they wish to, not just to age 71, and then either collect it in a lump sum for the time that they weren't on the program, or to receive a higher payment when they do. I also think that many people will be able to defer enrollment in Medicare because they're fundamentally healthy and insurable. So the idea that we have this rigid gateway to public benefits at age 65, I think, is an obsolete notion. Now, that doesn't mean that people aren't going to need help as they get older. The point is these programs ought to kick in at the point where they do need help.
Yeah, and you say they both are antiquated programs that need immediate attention by the next president. What do you want to see the next administration and Congress do?
Well, I want to see them. I definitely want to see more flexibility in when people receive and how they use their Social Security benefits. I think that's one thing. I also think that the Medicare program's cost growth is out of control and needs to be reined in. And I think those are important changes for boomers to realize to assure that the benefit is going to be there when they need it, which may be, you know, quite some time from now.
We're talking with the author of The Long Baby Boom, An Optimistic Vision for a Graying Generation, Jeff Goldsmith. And we welcome your questions for him, and we are interested in hearing from you, especially if you are a baby boomer at or near the traditional retirement age. What do you plan to do and why? Fewer than 15% of baby boomers say they plan to stop working at 65. Are you in that group? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along on this Thursday, July the 17th, about 20 minutes past 8 o'clock right now. Coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. Managing your professional and personal life doesn't have to conflict. After 5, Ben's guest offers leadership concepts that can improve every facet of your life. Good. That's after 5 o'clock this afternoon. We're talking about baby boomers and the positive effect that baby boomers might actually have to the economy as we go through our golden years. Our guest is the author of The Long Baby Boom, An Optimistic View for a Graying Generation, and we welcome your thoughts and questions for him. Our first caller is Kathy in Green Bay. Hi, Kathy. You're on the air.
Hi.
I'm
just calling to, number one, I'm 65 right now, and I cannot even afford to think about retiring.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to try and hold off till I'll see what happens when I turn 67. My question is, am I hurting myself by waiting that long as far as benefits?
I don't know, but we probably need to know more about your personal situation. But in terms of Social Security, do you have any idea, Jeff Goldsmith?
Well, and the present law, you can defer receiving a Social Security check until you're 71, and the benefits increase modestly per month when you do. The question I can't answer is with whether that increase is going to be enough to justify, you know, the sacrifices that you have today.
Yeah.
That's a really good question, and I don't know the answer without knowing more of the details.
Right. All right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Kathy. Well, that's... Again, you think that many baby boomers are continuing to work because they want to, but we have a lot, like Kathy, too, who are not retiring at 65 because they can't, Jeff Goldsmith.
Well, this is an important part of the book, is that there is huge diversity of circumstances mm-hmm. in this generation. And I said in the book that about a third of the baby boomer, what I call anxious and struggling, that is, they're already hurting today. I mean, this isn't a hypothetical. There are a lot of people that are struggling today to meet their expenses and that sort of thing. And if we take the traditional remedy to, you know, controlling the cost of these programs, which is to defer eligibility for Social Security and Medicare to 68 or 70 or 72, we're going to strand a lot of boomers in that struggling and anxious category between work and access to public benefits. And a lot of them will just tumble into poverty, and that's an intolerable outcome.
Yeah.
So I think the changes that we need to make in these programs need to be sensitive to the fact that there's a subset of this generation that is in a world of hurt right now, and that if we don't take cognizance of the fact that you know, that group of people really needs some help and some focus from government programs before age 65, we're going to have a declining standard of living and health status for older people, and that's not what we want in a wealthy society.
Yeah, here's the other study that I saw, that the percentage of workers who are confident about having enough money for a comfortable retirement decreased sharply from almost 30% in 2007 to just 18% in 2008. I mean, I suppose, too, the faltering economy right now is some reason behind all of that.
Well, you know, there's no substitute for hard assets here. And I think a lot of boomers assumed, in retrospect, disastrously, that there would be continuous increase in the value of their home asset mm-hmm. and that they were letting the home asset value growth do their saving for them. And what was worse, a lot of people were harvesting out the home equity with home equity loans and spending it on current needs. And I think, I mean, that's a scary, you know, it's a very scary thing when you see the value of that asset declining as it is right now. So it's not surprising at all that people are less confident than they were a year or two ago. Of course, we've also seen turbulence in the stock market, so people that have investment portfolios, those portfolios are smaller than they were a year or two ago. I don't think this is permanent, but it sure takes a strong stomach to handle the cycle that we're in right now.
Now we go to Victor in Milwaukee. Hi, Victor.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning to your guests. I'm 47 right now, and I definitely don't even use retirement in my daily vocabulary because I tell people jokingly I'm going to work till I'm 100 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm physically well, and I work out at the gym, and I'm going to stay physically fit until I'm 100. But when I get up in that age, I'm going to just run into maybe a home-based business or something like that, because I know I'm not going to be lifting, doing a lot of physical work when I'm at that age. And right now I'm in the military, planning on going active toward the end of the year. I may stay active. And one of the big incentive is because I know I have better financial benefits, not the best, but it's something. So, but that'll be something I can fall back on you know, when I'm up in age, but I'm going to continue to work. If I have to get a home-based business or do some kind of service just to keep an income flow coming in, that's something that I'm planning on doing. Also, I'm going to live within my means. I don't plan on getting a big house. If I got to live in some little caddyshack of an apartment just to keep my expenses down, that's the kind of move I'm going to have to make.
Yeah, Victor, you're a youngster. I didn't know, 47. But anyway, Victor's a regular caller, Jeff Goldsmith. He's going to work until he's 100.
Well, you know, more power to you. I mean, I think it's, you know, the real problem is going to be are the younger people going to want to keep us? I mean, I think that's, you know, that's more of a problem. But as I've been saying in some of my recent writing on this, you can't have it both ways. You can't complain that we're going to be a burden to the society and then not create work opportunities for us. So, and I think a lot of people are going to do what Victor's talked about, that is, you know, do things for themselves in a part-time, home-based. I think you began seeing that emerge as a pattern in the 80s, and it's continued. A huge fraction of the people that work at home are over age 45.
Mm-hmm. And Victor, good luck with your ideas with the military too. You know, another thing he mentioned that I wanted to follow up on is he said I'm in great health and physical shape, and I plan to stay that way too. This baby boom generation is we refuse to age, and we do take better care of our health, or at least for the most part, Jeff Goldsmith.
Well, there's clearly limits to that, but you know if you've read Michael Roizen's book, Real Age, I mean, Michael's argument there is that we do have some measure of influence over our actual physical age, that is, people of the same chronological age in Michael's model can be different in the age of their bodies by 30 or 40 years, depending on how they take care of them. And, you know, that is an area where we need to worry a little bit. There's a significant obesity problem in our country. If those problems aren't managed in a thoughtful way, diabetes and heart disease follow on, and the improvements that we've seen in the health status of older people, dramatic improvements that we've seen in the health status of older people the last 25 years, will begin to reverse themselves. But we don't have infinite control. We're all going to die someday, and we're all going to have disabilities of various kinds. But, you know, it's just like, you know, maintaining your car. I mean, you know, you don't change the oil, you know, you don't get the engine tuned up, after a while it doesn't run.
Yeah. Thanks again, Victor. Next we go to Dee in Sheboygan. Hi, Dee.
Good morning. I'm calling about the Medicare program, and the reason why it's headed for demise, according to the experts. And I think the reason is that they're adding too many programs. I see on television many, many advertisements from private companies advertising these hover rounds, and dozens of people will be daily riding around in them, and someone will be telling them that they could have this for practically free if they have Medicare and a supplement. And it's not only the cost of the programs, but it's also the advertising that goes on about it, which must really be much more than even the things themselves, like the diabetes stuff and so on and so forth. And I think if this were looked into, it would be a huge scandal.
Jeff?
Well, you know, there is the only thing that's major that's really been added to the Medicare program in the last few years has been a prescription drug benefit that has been, I think, enormously helpful to people, that they could get drugs that they needed. But I think the comment that you made about, yeah, and somebody else will have to pay for it, is really the key to it, is that if people perceive the program as just this cornucopia of benefits that's paid for by someone else, eventually you do have a problem. And, of course, the someone else are our younger workers, very few of whom believe that they're going to get a benefit comparable to the benefit that we're getting or we're going to get. So, you know, I think the core of your question is actually a very good one, which is that if people just perceive the services to be free, go get them, we are going to have a problem.
Yeah. Are those younger workers right that they're not going to have the benefits that we have now, or baby boomers will have?
Well, unless we change the ground rules, yeah, they are right.
Yeah, and by changing the ground rules, you want that flexible benefit part.
Well, yeah, and in the case of Medicare, a program that doesn't grow, you know, 2 or 3 percentage points faster than the economy.
Yeah.
You know, that's clearly, we're going to have to take a couple percentage points off the growth in these programs. And, you know, to do that is going to require changing the way in which the program pays doctors, hospitals, durable medical equipment suppliers, nursing homes, you name it.
Yeah, doctors already and hospitals and others are already complaining that they don't get reimbursed enough from Medicare and that they can't make ends meet and they don't want to see the Medicare patients because of that.
Well, there's some hospitals that are really hurting. You've got a bunch of small ones in Wisconsin that are just barely getting by. You've got other institutions that are doing very nicely under the current system. It's the same with doctors. There are primary care physicians, family practitioners that are making $70,000 a year or less and seeing their income going down because the fees don't go up faster than their expenses. And then there's others, you know, surgeons, interventional radiologists that are making $600,000, $800,000, $1 million a year. So to assume that everybody is suffering because they're not being paid enough by Medicare is just not accurate.
Oh, so what, maybe the family doctor gets more of a reimbursement than the surgeon?
Yeah, that's something. Well, not necessarily more, but the, you know, the tenfold difference in income is something that's going to have to change.
Yeah.
And Medicare is a big piece of it. We're going to have to figure out a way to pay our primary care physicians that older people are going to rely on, you know, to help them manage their health risks. A living wage. And we're not doing that right now.
Dave in Menominee, Michigan, emails, when I see other countries taking care of their elderly, letting them live their senior years doing what they enjoy and being fully covered medically, I can't help but think that we are moving backwards, hoping our seniors will work longer to help our sagging economy instead of keeping jobs in this country for the next generation of young citizens. What about that?
Well, there's about five questions in there. I'm not sure I know how to deal with all of them. But I think the European countries that have very generous health benefits and a declining, you know, younger workforce are going to have a way more serious problem with this than we are. We are fortunate that our economy is still growing. It's growing fitfully right now, but in a population that is growing. We're the only major country in the world, including China, that's going to have increases in the working age population, not only in the next 20 years, but in the subsequent 20 years. So I think that growth is really going to help us. The real point is people ought to be able to do what they want to do. And if people do want to continue working, because, you know, as Victor said earlier, the work is meaningful to him. It's something he feels like he's making a contribution. Well, then more power to us. Give us a help and encourage us to do that. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that it's wrong that people should retire.
Our guest is Jeff Goldsmith. His book is The Long Baby Boom, An Optimistic Vision for a Graying Generation. And our next caller is Rich in Hartford. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning, Jerry and guest. Thank you for having this program. Very interesting. I'm 57, baby boomer, looking ahead a little bit here. And I don't think any of this could be resolved without transparency in the healthcare system. I'm sure your guest is aware that let the market determine the price is not working. It's basically been deregulated since 1988, and the costs have gone right through the sky. You know, there's no end to the cost of health care. In the Milwaukee area, they're building hospitals within 3 miles of each other, and it's not the same economics as like a Walmart and a Kmart. The products they have are not the products, the equipment they have, you know, million-dollar scanners and this and that. There needs to be some regulation from the government so there isn't a duplication of efforts to make it more cost-effective.
Yeah.
And the transparency is the key to make us a consumer, and we can't be a consumer without the transparency. And they're fighting that tooth and nail, the insurance companies and the healthcare profession. And you stole some of that thunder when you said some are making little money, and those are the ones that really care, the ones that make little money. And then there's the greedy side of the healthcare profession that wants to make the $600,000, $700,000, $800,000 a year. And we see that in different systems right here in Milwaukee.
Yeah. Hold on, Rich. Let me get a reaction from our guest.
Well, there's a whole bunch of different things in there as well, but I couldn't agree more about the transparency. I mean, it's a very expensive black box, that health benefit. It's a very expensive process. When we go into a hospital, we're not sure what it's going to cost or whether we can have any influence over the cost. The building boom in Milwaukee, I completely don't understand. I mean, I used to do strategy consulting for health systems, and I just don't get why people are building more hospital beds right now. I think there are going to be a lot of empty beds here shortly. But, you know, as far as costs are concerned, I'm not sure there was, you know, some kind of deregulation in 1988. I just think that the health insurance system reverted to just passing through the costs instead of trying to control them meaningfully. And the only other thing I'd say is that the cost growth in healthcare is slowing down. It's into the mid-single digits now compared to 12-13% a year at the beginning of the decade. And I think the reason for that is that a lot of people have so much exposure in their health insurance to the actual cost of care that they've begun putting off using the health system. And when they do get a huge hospital bill, they put it at the bottom of the pile to be paid last. So I agree about the transparency. I think that it's past time that we understand the influence of the services that we provide and the costs that we pay.
And the next caller is Diane in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I started getting my Social Security at age 65 in a couple months, but I didn't retire, actually, until I was 68 and a half. But getting that extra money gave me allowed me to put more money into my 401k and a maximum in my IRAs. So now that I'm over 70, I'm reaping the benefits of that savings.
Oh, and say that one more time, though, Diane. You retired at 65 and a half?
No, I started collecting my Social Security when I was eligible at about 65 in a couple of months. I started getting the checks.
Oh, I see. And then
I kept working. So if you do it after you're 65, you don't have to pay any penalty for having that, for keeping working. It's only when you're under 65 that you get a penalty for earning too much money. And so I was 65, but I was still working till 68. So I had 3 extra years to save more money towards my retirement in a 401k or go to the bank and get an IRA.
So Jeff Goldsmith, is this an example of someone who is collecting Social Security when she doesn't need it?
Well, you know, I mean, the point is mm-hmm. she used it to continue mm-hmm. saving and building her asset base, which I think is a great thing to do. What I'm talking about is somebody that's, you know, you name it, selling real estate, writing books, whatever it is, and makes $100,000 or $200,000 a year and is collecting a Social Security check. That, I think, is really silly. And I'm not sure that that's the kind of, you know, that we ought to give people flexibility. I mean, you had flexibility in how you know, on when you enrolled. You didn't enroll early, and you made it what I think is a great decision to roll the money over and to use it to help continue saving. And I think that's what a lot of us are going to have to do. I think it's a great idea.
Thank you very much, Diane, for the call. I'm trying to understand how we might get the rich person to not collect a Social Security benefit.
Well, I think it's simple. I think you give us incentives to take the benefit when we need it. In other words, if I deferred receiving Social Security, and if I was fortunate enough to be able to continue working until 75, let me just not take the benefit. But when I do, give me a slightly larger amount of money than I would have gotten if I had enrolled in the program at 65 and stayed in it for 10 years. Either do it in a higher monthly payment or just give it to me in a lump sum, and let me do what our previous caller just did, put it into my 401k or my IRA or whatever it is, and continue investing it and growing it.
We're talking with Jeff Goldsmith, author of The Long Baby Boom, An Optimistic Vision for a Graying Generation. Jeff Goldsmith, also president of Health Futures Incorporated and associate professor of public health sciences at the University of Virginia. 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question for him, or if you have a story for us. If you're a baby boomer who is approaching or at or maybe even beyond retirement age, tell us how it is for you, talking about how baby boomers most anyway are not planning on retiring at age 65. And our guess is that that's actually positive news for the economy in the future and for Social Security. 1-800-642-1234 and Madison 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Stay with us. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn and her guests will discuss the immigration raid last month on a meat plant in Iowa where nearly half of the plant's workers were arrested. That's coming up after 9. Our guest this hour is Jeff Goldsmith, author of The Long Baby Boom. We have an email from Matt wondering, how does the notion of the gray ceiling fit into all of this? This is the idea that baby boomers not retiring will hurt the ability of younger generations to step up and assume leadership, and for that matter, have decent paying jobs. How does that fit into all of this, Jeff Goldsmith?
Well, if you're an employer like a hospital or the federal government or a public utility or even a manufacturing firm, what you're looking at right now is a gaping hole in the mid-career workforce, which has actually shrunk. That 35 to 44-year-old workforce has actually shrunk about 10% since the beginning of the decade. So the reality is there are many parts of our economy that are not going to be able to afford for us boomers to retire, even if we wish to do so. Mm. And a lot of them are going to be making significant changes in their, the design of work. There's going to be a lot more job sharing, a lot more part-time or episodic employment. I think there's a lot of sectors of our economy, particularly the safety net part of it, that are powered by boomers. And it isn't going to be a question of taking opportunities away from people. It's a question of how do we meet the needs. And we have a lot more young people being born now than a few years ago. And yet there's a lot of school districts where the average age of the teachers in the early 50s. Mm-hmm. So, the idea that we're barring the way for younger people to take our jobs is just, it's not what's happening in a lot of parts of our economy.
Our next caller is Joseph in La Crosse. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you. I just wanted to point out, when Social Security first starts in 1939, you have people that half the population isn't living to the retirement age. And today, you have a vast majority of people who are not only living to the retirement age, but beyond it. We need to change that. And when you even suggest changing it by a couple months over a period of years, people throw a riot. We have to accept that the situation has changed. One of the first women to ever receive a check from Social Security had contributed about $30 and then went on to receive almost $24,000 in benefits over a period of years. When you multiply that factor by exponentially and say everybody's going to live beyond retirement and the average person gets, more than anywhere from 10 to 100 times what they've contributed, it mathematically it just doesn't work anymore.
Mm-hmm. Jeff Goldsmith?
Well, you're right. The average life expectancy of an American at the time Social Security was enacted was 57. It's now 81, I think, something like that. But what I objected to, and they actually did change it. I will not be eligible for a full Social Security benefit until I'm 66.
Mm-hmm.
For a younger boomer, it's 67. So it's not like the number hasn't gone up. But I think if you do what some policy folks suggest and put off eligibility for the programs for everybody until 70 or 71, millions of boomers who are struggling and anxious, as I call them in the book, now will just tumble into poverty. So I don't think that's a viable solution.
Well, I think you've got to implement it over a period of time. I'm not suggesting that we raise the age immediately,
right,
but a gradual implementation of increasing the age for retirement, I don't think would be an unreasonable situation.
What do you do about the people that are right now today? About 15% of the generation has no assets, and a significant fraction of them, because they were working part-time or in low-wage jobs, when they do get Social Security, it's going to be a pittance. So I think that there are real risks here to just saying age ought to be the gateway to getting benefits. I actually think the minimum benefit for Social Security is probably inadequate and needs to be strengthened. So I think when you actually begin looking at the generation itself, you'll discover huge variation in circumstances between boomers. There's 76 million of us, which is why I argued in the book for increasing flexibility, not for making it an all-or-nothing benefit at age 65.
Yeah. What about, Jeff Goldsmith, the talk about allowing people to invest their own money into their own retirement money into the private market as a part of their Social Security benefit?
Well, I think the polling data on that is probably going to look different now, this market slump than it did 2 or 3 years ago when the market was booming. Mm-hmm. But I'm in favor of private accounts, not at the expense of current beneficiaries, which is the way in which the Bush administration's proposal would have worked, but at the the idea that you would, that there'd probably be a modest increase in the Social Security FICA deduction and that you'd get to keep the money. Whether you, you know, put it all into, you know, General Motors stock or not, I think there are a lot of people who think that the investment options ought to be relatively limited. They ought to have index funds or, you know, sector funds or something like that. But that, you know, the idea that we just take the money and put it into, you know, put it into our current mix of hot stocks, I think that's not going to be a very good strategy.
Mm-hmm. Janet in Baraboo is with us now. Hi, Janet.
Hi there. First of all, I want to say I'm 61. I do not see in the foreseeable future, because of my income, because of my assets. I mean, I'll be lucky if I can retire when I'm 75 or 80. I do plan on drawing my Social Security as soon as I can draw maximum and work full-time. But I don't, you know, I guess this probably wouldn't work. But I think if somebody is making, say, $150,000 a year, I think that they should either not be eligible for Social Security, or they should have a much smaller amount, because I certainly could live on $150,000 a year. And that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Well, I guess my response to that would be that I think that to simply deprive people of access to the benefit is wrong, because we all invested in this program. Money was taken out of our paychecks that we ought to get back. So, you know, I mean, I put a couple $100,000 into Social Security over my, you know, 40 years in the workforce, and, you know, to simply confiscate that I think is really wrong. On the other hand, I don't believe that I'm entitled to a huge subsidy from younger people, you know, from people that are working at, you know, fast food franchises that don't have any health insurance. I think it's wrong for there to be a huge intergenerational subsidy for us folks that do have resources. So one of the things I talk about in the book is reducing those subsidies. So in a sense, I kind of agree with what the caller just said. I just don't think you should take it away because it's our money.
Yeah. Should there be a higher income cap for the Social Security tax?
You know, I think that's a mistake. I mean, it's if you believe that the purpose of the program is just to redistribute income, well, then why not redistribute more? I think that's what Barack Obama is proposing to do, is to raise the cap.
Mm-hmm.
I think if the problem is that we're not saving enough, everyone ought to save enough. It isn't that we just it isn't just that we you know, take money from the wealthy and give it to the poor. I don't think that's really the right way to do this. I think that, you know, that if our present national savings rate, which is zero, is inadequate, we ought to increase the FICA rate a percent maybe and let people keep the money in private accounts and make sure that it's invested in a responsible way.
Richard and Nina is our next caller. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I was going to just talk briefly about my situation compared to my brother's situation,
mm-hmm.
which I think bring out some of the points that the guest is making. I've worked for several private companies, and as a result, my pension will be absolutely minimal when I retire. But I've been fortunate enough to have decent jobs, and I've been saving, so I have a decent IRA, albeit less than it was a few months ago. And I can keep working, hopefully, beyond the, quote, normal retirement age. My brother, in contrast, is a civil service worker. He's worked for New York City for many years. And he's one of these guys in a situation where if he earns X dollars today, X not being a very big number,
yeah.
If he were to retire tomorrow, and I guess he's almost 60 at this point, he'd get close to the same amount in retirement as he does working. He might get, you know, 3/4 of X or something like that. So basically, he's just working for 25% of his income. So he's looking at retiring, quote, retiring from civil service and getting another job so that he can, well, I guess double dip if you want to look at it negatively. But it kind of brings to the point that the guest is saying about how a lot of the programs are designed against people's best interests and against society's best interests. He's an experienced, good civil service worker, but essentially pushing him out the door.
Yeah, Jeff Goldsmith?
Well, and there are a lot of pension programs, mm-hmm. and I don't want to get into pension fund arcana here because it's just too mind-numbing, where there's actually negative accrual, where, you know, you're actually lowering your lifetime income by continuing to work because of the way in which the the pension is structured. And I have a friend that retired from essentially running the University of Illinois during, most of the last 20 years at 55 or something like that, well short of a full career, because that's exactly what was happening to him. The longer he worked, the less he got. So I think that's bad benefit design and needs to be changed.
Thank you very much, Richard, for those examples. You know, Richard made a comment, an offhand comment, that he's going to have a comfortable retirement with his IRA that's smaller than it used to be. What do you think what's happening right now is going to do to your vision for the long baby boom?
Well, clearly, there are going to be more people that I called might be okay in the book that are going to be pushed into the anxious and struggling category because the value of the assets that they've accumulated has declined. I have no idea because I'm not an economist. The economists don't know either how long our current economic troubles are going to continue. But if you're not able to save, if you're not able to set aside cash from your current cash flow, at some point in the next few years, it's going to be really hard for people to sustain their living standards. So the economic troubles, I think, have focused a lot of people's attention on how important it is to have control over your expenses. And I look at all the credit card debt that we've accumulated. There's $1 trillion in installment debt out there right now. I think people have been living beyond their means, both as a country and as individuals. And unfortunately, that's one of the things that tends to come crashing to a halt when the economy slows down.
Dan in White Lake is with us now. Hello.
Good morning. Although you're talking about baby boomers, the problem with baby boomers and Social Security is essentially anybody born after about 1950 is getting a horrible rate of return. The stock market and just simple mutual funds, index funds, will return over the long, long haul about 7 or 8%. If we start, since Social Security takes 15% out of your wages, if we start to shift at the rate of 1% per year from going into the general fund for everybody to take 1% per year to put into your fund for your own account, and then have a heavily government-regulated, government-insured, and government-controlled permission for money managers like mutual funds in the private sector to manage those accounts, we will end up with a situation where someone who starts on this plan today or when it begins and never makes more than $10 an hour his entire life will have $1.4 million in the bank at the time of his retirement at age 65. That's the cure for Social Security, except that there's two hookers. Number one, the government is going to have to collect in taxes somehow or other the monies to pay the elderly or the baby boomers that are starting to retire now from other sources, or they won't get what they've been promised, and they won't give that up. And the other problem is that the initial problem with Social Security is when it started, it had to almost immediately start paying out benefits and has now done so for about, 75 years almost?
Yeah, Dan, I don't mean to be rude, but we're running short on time. You want to react to Dan's plan, Jeff Goldsmith?
Well, I agree with him that I think people have gotten a lousy rate of return on the Social Security investment. I mean, during a lot of the 60s and 70s, the Social Security Trust Fund was invested at like 1.5% or 2%. And if that money had, even if the government had invested it in stocks or an index fund, there'd be a whole lot more actual cash available to pay people now. So I agree with the caller. I think that we should use private accounts, but that we do need to think about how we can postpone some of the current costs to pay benefits to the people who really need them, which is my argument behind creating opportunities to defer, and I also think reducing the subsidies to the wealthiest boomers who aren't going to need the Social Security check. And I talk about a lot of those issues in the Social Security chapter of my book.
Marlo in Viroqua is with us now. Hi, Marlo.
I've got a different idea as far as the problem is concerned. I've been administrator for a couple of estates for people that do Social Security for many, many years and died with huge estates One of them started drawing Social Security, and I don't know that she ever put anything into it because she never worked full time. My solution is that most of us have outlived our what we've put in. If we've lived over 8 or 9 years in retirement, we've gotten back everything we've put in and much more. I think we should make a decision. Everybody pays in a maximum up to $1 million. If they make $1 million, they ought to pay 15% in or whatever they pay. And then at the time they retire, at whatever age, they decide they have two options. The first option is, I've got enough money, I don't need Social Security. And at that point, then the government gives them back what they have put in with perhaps a 4% interest rate over the years, and they don't pay it back in a lump sum, but yeah, they pay it back annually until that person has got his money back and he no longer gets Social Security. The other people that don't have money that need Social Security then can get Social Security as long as they live at their regular benefit, but at their death, their estate will be subjected, if they have any estate, to pay into the Social Security fund whatever they've taken out over
I'm sorry again. I'm trying to get in as many callers as possible here, but almost out of time for real now. Jeff Goldsmith, maybe you can very briefly react to Marlo's plan, but more importantly, it's Congress and the next administration that has to deal with this. What do you expect is going to happen?
Well, I think reforming Social Security is a really low priority right now, given that we have a $500 billion budget deficit. I think people are going to be focusing on that more than anything else. And they'll put Social Security on the back burner. They shouldn't, because right now Social Security is funding a lot of that deficit. But I agree with at least the first part of what the previous caller said, which is that we ought to, people have money, they ought to get back from Social Security what they put in plus a rate of return. That's essentially what I argued in the book.
Yeah.
But not receive a subsidy from younger people.
Yeah, the title of your book is An Optimistic Vision for a Graying Generation. We sounded kind of pessimistic this hour, haven't we?
We know it's a pessimistic time right now. I mean, I think people are hurting, and they're kind of frightened about the value of their assets and whether the society is going to be able to, an economy are going to be able to turn itself around. But I guess my point is, this is a remarkable generation. I mean, there is a tremendous amount of creative energy and literally tens of trillions of dollars in assets that we've accumulated during our working lifetimes. And if we can make intelligent decisions about how to use that energy and just listen to boomers ourselves, listen to what it is that we want to do and help us do it, our society will have a much better outcome than most of the gloom and doom people believe.
Good. Well, that's a good place to leave it. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Jeff Goldsmith, the author of The Long Baby Boom, An Optimistic Vision for a Graying Generation. Thanks to Carmen Jackson and Karen Prager and Rob Ferret for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.